Hey, this is Jack Cordero, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 27 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, the newly appointed chairman of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. Before we are joined by this week's guest, I would like to briefly mention our sponsor, Amazon.com. If you want to support this podcast, go to NatsGM.com, click on the Amazon link on the right side of the page, and go ahead and do your online shopping. One more favor, if I could, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes, as this helps us gather additional listeners to the show. And without further ado, my guest this week is MassinSports.com's Chris Johnson. Many will recognize CJ from his years working in the DC media at both Sports Talk 980 and 106.7 The Fan. Now he has a new gig covering the Nationals for Masson, and I am eager to talk some Nationals baseball with him this week. Chris, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Hey, man, it's good to be on. Good to be on for the first of, I hope, many appearances.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. We have a few mutual friends in common, so it's really nice to make your acquaintance today and talk some baseball. I appreciate you checking in with us live from Vieira.
You got it.
All right, well, first place I want to start, I think so many people that are listening to this probably know you as CJ from the local area, but if, for those who don't know you, first place to start is just have yourself introduced to the audience and, you know, talk about your media career a bit.
Yeah, like you said, I was at Sports Talk 980, or I guess what they call it now, ESPN 980, for a long time. Started back there in 96 and pretty much served in a bunch of different roles there, anywhere from actually ended up running the station as program director, but a lot of people, I guess, have known me from working with Coach John Thompson on that show for a long time, actually since its beginning back in 99. So I did that. That was part of Redskins game day for a long time, produced the games with Sonny and Sam, which was one of the major thrills of my life after having grown up like a lot of us in the D.C. area in their basements, turning the sound down on the TV and listening to the radio call of Sonny and Sam and Frank back then. So that was certainly a thrill to do that for a couple of years, working with the Skins, and then moved over to WGFK, to The Fan, 106.7 The Fan, I guess back in 2009, I think, when the station flipped over and became an all sports radio station, and started working with Mike Wise, the post columnist, and yeah, that's pretty much gets us to where we're at. I've been all over, covered many, many different events, Super Bowls, Final Four, all that sort of stuff, and so yeah, now I'm starting a whole brand new venture here, a whole brand new gig here with Masson, and excited, man. Can't get a better team to cover, or at least a team with more expectations than the Nationals. There are certainly worse teams to cover in the Washington area, as you know.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. So tell us about your new job with Masson. What are you going to be doing for them?
So basically you can see my work at MassonSports.com. I'm technically be covering the beat, as you would say, for the Nationals, the day-to-day beat. So I'll be with the team as I am, you know, as I started a few days ago down here in Vieira from spring training throughout the entire season, all the way through with what may might end in late October if everything goes well for the Nats. So yeah, basically I'll be writing for the website for MassonSports.com under the Nationals pastime blog that you can see up there on the homepage, so you can check out the stories there. And then I'm sure, unfortunately, you'll probably catch my ugly mug on television here and there as well on Masson, maybe for some pre-games and post-games or Saturday mornings. So that's basically what you'll get.
And how did the transition come about from, I mean, like I've said a couple times now, we know you so well from radio and local kind of media stuff, some TV. Now you're going to be doing the writing and the website stuff. How did that transition come about?
Basically, you know, over the years, you know, I've done, you know, as part of like just, you know, doing radio and some TV, I've done some writing as well. And to be honest with you, actually, you know, when I got started in this, like a long time ago now, what's crazy to say, a couple decades ago, I wanted to write. I wanted to write for a newspaper, and you know, growing up in D.C. and sort of, you know, reading Kornheiser and Denlinger and you know, Boswell and some of these legends that that we read in the sports page, in the actual sports page, not on your phone or your iPad. I mean, that was that was something that I actually always aspired to be, and so this opportunity just came about because Dan Calco, who I'm sure all of your listeners are very familiar with.
You go, Dan Calco.
He was doing essentially what I'm doing now. He was writing for MassinSports.com, covering the Nationals, and then last year he transitioned over to also take on the television duties, the sideline, if you will, the dugout reporting during the games. And so at the end of the season during the off season, Masson decided to split it up and, you know, sort of take those duties away from Dan from the writing on the website and make him, you know, exclusively a television guy for all the games, you know, the entire season. So that's when I sort of slid in there and gave this a go.
Well, that sounds great. At least good for us anyways. More content is always a good thing, you know, from this side of the table anyways. So,
yeah, that's what we're aiming for.
Yeah, so like I started the interview with a little bit ago, you've been down in spring training now just about a week, a few days maybe short of that. What's been the vibe in camp thus far? And has anything or anyone, you know, stood out, you know, particular so far?
I mean, it certainly looks like it's going to be a heck of a fun locker room to cover and a heck of a fun bunch of guys to cover as we're getting going here. You know, it's the early stages. I got down here on Wednesday, a day before pitchers and catchers were supposed to report, as they all did on Thursday, and tomorrow the rest of the roster will show up, though. I think that there's only four players who actually haven't shown up here yet. I think it's Escobar, Karp, Dice, Defoe, and Worth, I think, are the four that haven't shown up. So basically everybody's here, except for those four who Matt Williams said today are expected to be here tomorrow, no problem. So, yeah, the vibe's been great. I mean, I can tell you about it. There's a video that I actually posted on my Twitter account. It's actually on the MassinSports.com page as well. It'll sort of give you a real good feel of how of the feel, just a real good feel of the vibe of the team down here. Yesterday, you know, the teams move from station, the pitchers move from station to station down here. There's a bullpen station where they throw for 8 to 10 minutes, and then they move over to a bunting station, and there's a station where they practice holding the runners on, and there's a fielding station where they practice coming off the mound to field bunts. And so there's several different stations that they're at for about, you know, 10 minutes each, and the horn blows, and then they shuffle. Each of them are in groups of five, and there's 30 pitchers total, so they move, you know, they shuffle from one station to the next station. And yesterday, the group 1B, as they call it, which includes Gio Gonzalez, Doug Fister, Jordan Zimmerman, Craig Stammen, and Jerry Blevin. So you got some heavy hitters in that, just in that group right there. You got some pretty powerful arms and some pretty comical personality that are part of that group as well. They went over to the bunting station, and Gio was the last one to bunt, and he was struggling badly. And McCaddy was handling the jugs machine. And, you know, everybody sort of, all the fans that were here made their way over. The Lerner family made their way over, was watching. And as basically Blevins and Stammen and Fister and all the guys started taunting and heckling Gio because he couldn't lay down a bunt. He was just struggling poorly. He was struggling badly. And so they ended up getting the crowd that was around to start chanting, Gio, Gio, Gio. You know, so then Gio, he drops the bat. He, like, almost crumbles down. He's like, you know, clearly embarrassed, but having fun with it as well, you know, sort of nervous laughter and you know, and they're relentless. The rest of, you know, Blevins and Zimmerman, the guys are relentless. They just keep ribbing him and they keep going after him and he keeps fouling off bunts and, you know, and he's finally on the last one, you know, bunts one back up the middle and everybody cheers, you know, sort of mockingly, even though if it was a regular game, as I wrote in my story, it probably would have ended up in a rally-ending double play because it went straight back to the pitcher's mound. But and then it was classic because Matt Williams had made his way over when he sort of heard all the crowd noise, and so when Gio finally laid the one down, you know, everybody cheered, and then the last thing that you sort of heard was Williams walking away yelling, "Gio, I didn't see that last one," you know, to make sort of sarcastically to make him feel bad, you know, about it. So, and I talked to Gio about it afterwards, and, you know, he just said, you know, like, "I can't believe that. I can't believe, you know, we're just getting started here and, like, you know, struggling out there. And then I've got these guys in my group. Like, I couldn't have, like, worse guys in my group as, like, you know, the personalities of, you know, like, Blevins and Schiffer and Stammen and Zimmerman and those guys." And he was like, and then, you know, like, Skip comes over. And so that was a great thing to see. And then I think also, you know, sort of pulled the curtain back to show you sort of, you know, the personality. I mean, there's so many expectations on this team. They could really, you know, we've seen it, whether it's in baseball or whatever sport it is, where sometimes, you know, a team goes into a season with so many expectations that it can really sit on their shoulders and affect them mentally and affect the way that they end up performing. And so, you know, I think just little things like that where it's clear, like, the camaraderie that they have amongst each other, you know, really, you know, translates into throughout the clubhouse. And I think that gives them a you know, the ability to have a style on the field that's not tight.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. That's a great story. And, you know, Gio will lighten up any kind of mood and situation. So, next place, you were telling me off air a little bit that this is your first trip down to spring training to Vieira. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on Vieira as a whole.
I mean, the stadium itself, you know, the stadium itself is fine. Space Coast Stadium, you know, it's cool. I mean, even though the Nats, I guess, you know, won't be here much longer, I'll be heading down to West Palm. But, I mean, the stadium itself is fine. There's not much around in Vieira here. I wish I could give you the nightlife report in Vieira, although I don't think there's much of one, but I haven't really made it out at night to check out the nightlife of Vieira. So, I don't know. I mean, I would advise anybody coming down here for spring training to stay closer to the beaches. So, to probably stay over near the beaches in Melbourne or the beaches in Cocoa Beach. Otherwise, you're not doing much else if you're hanging out just in Vieira other than going to the ballpark.
Yeah, the ballpark's great, but the area around it's a little quiet, maybe, is probably the nice way to say it.
I feel bad for the people of the area, though. I was out last night for a little bit just having dinner at a local restaurant. It's actually just right up the street from the ballpark, and you know, just talking to some people in there, and they, you know, they're very disappointed that they're going to lose the Nats here. And there was actually some other people in Orlando from Orlando. They were where the Braves train, and they, you know, that's the other story that sort of goes along with it, is that, you know, there's a fear that Atlanta will eventually move as well, because they're going to be the only team really that's left in sort of central Florida up there, and which makes it difficult, you know, for them to travel, which is, I guess, really the main thing behind why the Nats want to get out of Vieira and go to West Palm, is because, you know, they're spending so much time on the bus during spring training games, during the schedule, you know, having to go an hour and a half here, 2.5 hours there, you know, and back and forth, that it wears on it, versus if you can get down a little further down south, down 95, then you're around sort of an area where it's 15 minutes to this ballpark, it's 25 minutes over here, you know, cuts off a lot of your day, allows you to do a lot more, and maybe not wear the guys out as much.
Well, that gives me a perfect Jim Bowden segue into what are you hearing about the move to West Palm Beach?
I mean, everything that that I've heard is just inevitable. You know, I guess the vote's coming up, the final vote's coming up here in, you know, early March. But, you know, it seems inevitable to me. I mean, we saw, you know, the governor of Florida, the statement that he released a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I don't foresee any issue with it not passing. I think that, that it's going to go through.
And we're assuming in 2017 we'll be in West Palm?
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Okay.
2017. So this year and then next year here in Vieira. And then I think that's the plan, is that hopefully it'd be up and ready to go by February 2017.
Well, Palm Beach is certainly quite an uptick in nightlife anyways from Vieira. So.
Yes, it is.
But let me move on to some themes that are going on in camp, kind of surrounding the Nationals. First things first, you've written a couple of pieces I've seen about Danny Espinosa and transitioning to batting only right-handed. Just kind of what have you seen, and what are you hearing about that?
Well, I mean, I can tell you, I watched him for a little bit in the cage today, and I know that obviously it's just batting practice, but that's just the plan, is that, you know, he's exclusively going righty and righty. He'll be digging in on the right side of the batter's box against, no matter if it's a right-handed pitcher or a left-handed pitcher, all season long. So Matt Williams and Mike Rizzo have stated that over the first couple of days here, that's the plan, that he's going to be doing it throughout spring training, and that Williams actually told us yesterday that he's actually going to spend more time hitting than he will fielding, that there'll be times when the infielders will be going through fielding drills and you actually won't see Danny Espinosa out there with them, because they'll actually have him hitting more, or actually maybe even standing in on bullpen sessions just to get that feel of standing up there against a right-handed pitcher. So I watched him a little bit in the cage today, and he seemed very comfortable. He actually, in the short time that I was watching, I watched him rope one down the left field line smacked off the left field foul pole, and then I watched him hit one to the left field power alley that was well out of the ballpark. So he seemed to be, you know, again, it's just batting practice, but he seemed to look fairly comfortable in there. I mean, obviously we know what he's capable of defensively and how valuable he is there. I mean, if they could actually get his back going there, you know, and getting comfortable on that right side, who knows? You know, you might have something there offensively with Espinosa, who's, you know, been a major hole in that lineup for the last couple of years. But I think second base in general is actually, you know, I mean, I'm not making any news here. I mean, we know going into this spring training, it's basically the only question, and it's really not even that much of a question, because we assume that Escobar is going to be the starting second baseman for this team, especially considering that Rizzo shipped Tyler Clipper away in order to get Escobar, that he'll be the second baseman there. But there's some, I think, more than any other position on the field here, and probably including any pitchers that are in camp. I mean, second baseman is, you know, it has some unique characters that are there. I mean, between like Escobar, who obviously, you know, has been a shortstop primarily his entire career. I mean, I think he's only played, you know, less than 25 games at second base, and that goes all the way back into his rookie year, I think in 2009, since he actually played any games at second base. So you have him, who, you know, he's transitioning from short to second. And then you've got Espinosa, who, you know, who knows how he fares coming out of this spring training after hitting, you know, from the right side. And he's been doing it all offseason as well. And then you have a guy like Dan Ugla, who they signed, you know, it's a minor league contract, inviting him to spring training back in late December. And I wrote about him this morning for the website. And, you know, Ugla, I mean, we know what Ugla's done. I mean, you know, 5 years hitting over 30 home runs. I mean, the guy's been a multiple-time All-Star, and then he gets, you know, hit in the head twice back in 11 and 12, and you know, his career has never been the same. You know, he's struggled hitting, and he struggled mightily fielding as well, and so then all of a sudden he goes to this doctor out in Las Vegas who Marquis Grissom hooked him up with back in August, and you know, he told us yesterday that, you know, he's feeling fine, and all of a sudden he's got his balance back and his eyesight's improved, and you know, he feels like he's got a legitimate shot to come in here and compete. And you know, again, it's just one of those question marks. It's like, well, what if he does? You know, what if he does actually regain, you know, the, you know, Dan Uggla form of 2008-2009? I mean, he's 35 years old, so it's unlikely that happens, but what if it does? If it does, then all of a sudden, you know, you may have legitimate competition coming out of Vieira here at, you know, by the end of March.
And are you getting any read on what the Nationals are thinking about Uggla? Is this one of those things where they're throwing something at a wall and they're hoping it sticks, or do they really think there's, you know, a very good chance that maybe all of his struggles the last couple of years have been because of the concussion issues?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it's really a no risk for them, you know, and for Uggla as well, you know, there's not much he's laying out there either because he's still getting paid. I think it's 13 million from the Braves, from a contract that he signed back in, I think, 2010 or 2011. They're still on the hook for $13 million for him. So as he told us yesterday, and like, you know, he's got nothing to lose, like, legitimately. You know, they could cut him in a few weeks, tell him to go home, and he's still counting the money in his bank. So, I think, you know, obviously Rizzo comes out of this looking like a genius because he just took a flyer on Uggla. You know, they have a previous relationship. And he said, let's see if this is legit, that he's cured of these issues that he's been having since he's seen the doctor back in August. And we'll bring him in. We'll give him a look. We need it. You know, at the time when they signed him, in late December, it was before they made the move to acquire Escobar. So, you know, I think they're, you know, he's thinking, well, we need a second baseman, we need offensive baseman. What's the harm in bringing him in? Minor league deal, and we bring him in. And like I said before, he does regain his form or close to his form and find his back and not have any issues in the field, and next thing you know, like, maybe he's not a starter at second base, but maybe at the very least he's capable of making the team and coming off your bench. So, you know, I think there's certainly some storylines there at the second base position that, you know, we'll be watching throughout the next couple of weeks here, especially once games get going.
Yeah, I'm eager to see if Uggla is back or if this is, you know, just going to be kind of a minor league story that we talk about in March, but I like the fact that he's 35 years old and he's going to get paid that money and he's still in camp grinding away. I like seeing that.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, and that's the one thing that, you know, I've noticed myself just talking to him the first couple of days and Rizzo and Williams, who obviously know this guy very well. In fact, you know, Matt Williams said that he's known Uggla, that, you know, Uggla was in the minor leagues when Williams, you know, was still playing. So, you know, these guys have known each other actually since their playing days. And then Rizzo, you know, has known him. He actually drafted him when he was the director of player development with the Diamondbacks. So he was responsible for the draft. I mean, Rizzo drafted him way back in 2005. So, you know, he's known this guy for a long time. And both of them said, you know, just a high character guy, tremendous work ethic, great guy in the clubhouse. And you know, everything that he said over the first couple of days when we got a chance to talk to him is, you know, it totally reflects what they've said.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm hoping that works out for him, because just he put way too many home runs on us for too many years, so hopefully he can put a few for us, you know, the next couple of years. So
right.
Last theme I got to ask you about: Ryan Zimmerman moving to first base. I know there were some pictures going around on Twitter and so forth today about him working out there. Anything you've seen or anything you've heard?
Yeah, well, he was out there today. Matt Williams was actually out there working with him at first base today, and Williams talked about it afterwards with us when we did our little media session with him after practice was over today. And you know, he sort of reiterated what some of the stuff we've been hearing for the last couple months is that, you know, they feel like it's going to be a smooth transition for Zimmerman. You know, Rizzo said that, you know, he's a tremendous athlete. You know, he's a guy who played shortstop in college and, you know, moved over to third base. They don't see any issue with him moving to first base. And in fact, I think, you know, Rizzo took the jump and said, you know, he expects him to actually someday be a Gold Glove capable first baseman. So what Williams said today was the things that he's going to have the most difficulty with is the cutoff throws. You know, not so much fielding the position, but having to be the guy for the cutoff throws, which is where he's not necessarily used to, you know, having been over third base. So that's what the next few weeks are for here. And obviously the key to Ryan Zimmerman is, you know, staying healthy. We know when he's healthy that he can produce at the plate. He's pretty much consistently produced at the plate over his career in Washington. It's just a matter of can this guy stay healthy. And I believe, you know, he missed 101 games last year. So they need, with LaRoche out of the lineup, with him gone now to Chicago, they need Zimmerman to pick up what they lost with LaRoche. And that means he's got to stay healthy and stay in the lineup for them.
Well, and I like hearing once again that Zimmerman, you know, the hitters don't have to report until tomorrow, technically, and he's already in there working at first base, getting extra reps. Once again, you know, he could take it easy and take his time, but instead he's in there, you know, grinding away.
Yeah, and so you got a guy like him who's been here, it's an Arts fan, been here for a couple days already, and he's coming off a hernia surgery back in December. So, you know, he could have taken his time, but he's been here. He's been getting work in. Espinoza's been here since day one. You know, and he's been out on the field working, you know, so there's been a number of position players that have not only shown up here early, but have shown up and started working early as well. So that is the, like you said, you know, sort of the mentality that you get, you know, excited about and that you're looking for from players that, you know, are a lot of these guys superstar type players.
Yeah, that is really neat to see, and particularly with the expectations so high on them that they're there, and they're, like you said, there is a lightheartedness going on, like the Gio story you referenced, but they're there to work, too, so that's good to hear.
Yep.
So, all right, CJ, I got one last question for you before we finish this week. We do it every time, or most every show, rapid fire. I ask you a question for kind of the first thing that jumps off the top of your head. Pretty simple. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. Favorite baseball team growing up, or favorite team growing up?
Favorite team in any sport growing up?
Yes.
Georgetown Hoyas.
Okay. I guess basketball would be the, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basketball. Yeah.
Favorite DC athlete all time?
Favorite DC athlete all time. Dexter Manley.
That's a great answer. That's a really great answer. Your best experience as a member of the media?
Oh, my God, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one because I worked with Coach Thompson for such a long time. I'm not somebody at all in any parts of my life that's starstruck, really, by anybody. I've never been an autograph seeker or anyone who asks for pictures with, you know, and I don't knock anybody or have any problem with anybody who does that. That's just not me at all. So, I guess relish some sort of, you know, experiences that I've been privileged to have. And I mean, there's so many. I mean, I guess just even like, you know, working with Coach Thompson for so many years, I was lucky enough to be around some unbelievable people because of him. I mean, I can tell you that, like, the beginning, this answer honestly could go on for like a couple hours. You know, we could we'd probably be better off doing this one, like when I get back to DC, you know, over a couple beers at whatever our favorite local establishment is. But I mean, I can tell you a couple right off the bat, you know. And when I early on, when I started working with Coach Thompson, we were doing a taping down at Georgetown University at the library down there for TNT for Black History Month. And in the feature that Coach Thompson at that time was working for TNT, and he was actually hosting or doing interviews, and part of the feature was Coach Thompson speaking with Bill Russell, Oscar Robertson, and Wayne Embry.
Oh, and, wow.
And that was that was in the so this was in the early part of the day, like, I don't know, 9, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning. And back then, the radio show was at 3 o'clock back in Rockville. That's where the studios were. And so I'd driven my car, my Jeep at the time, down there and you know, parked on the street or whatever, went in. You know, we did the session with TNT for a few hours, and, you know, we're walking out across campus, and they had a limo for the guys, and they were actually, Coach Thompson had gotten them to come back into the studio with us to do the radio show that day, which is unbelievable, because no other radio show in the country back at that time would get Oscar Robertson and Bill Russell to sit down together on the air for an hour. And so Coach Thompson said to me, he said, "Hey, you know, you want to ride back with us in the limo?"
Yes. How quickly can I say?
And I, you know, I'm pretty sure I reacted just like that. I said yes before he finished the question. And as we're walking to the limo, I'm thinking to myself, I don't care if they tow my car because it's parked illegally. And I don't care whatever fine that I have to pay at the end of the day, you know, if they do end up towing it, I'm getting in this freaking limo with Oscar Robertson, Bill Russell, and John Thompson and riding back, you know. And so, I mean, there's stuff like that that, you know, and all of these, by the way, I barely ever talked, you know. I sat there and I basically took it all in and I listened. But I mean, there's, you know, there's crazy ones. I was sort of reflecting on some of them last week. When unfortunately Dean Smith passed away, because Coach Thompson and Dean Smith were very, very close friends. And every year we would go out to Las Vegas, where Michael Jordan did this senior flight school, basically like a fantasy basketball camp for 35 old schlubs and older, like, you know, old rich guys, basically. And they would bring the best of the best of in the coaching world out there. And I mean, anybody you can think of, you know, Jim Boeheim's and the Lenny Wilkins and the Jim Calhouns and the whoever, Mike Krzyzewski's, whoever you can think of. And Dean Smith and Coach Thompson were always the co-chairmen of the event. And so, and they, neither of them wanted really anything to do with it. So they would basically just hang, they'd basically just hang out together all the time. And we would be out there doing the radio show, and Coach Smith would just come in and sit in the room with us all the time, and we'd have breakfast with him all the time, and we'd go to dinner with him and, you know, some of the other guys. And, you know, looking back on it, I was thinking, you know, when he passed away, I'm like, same thing with Coach Tarkanian, with Jerry Tarkanian. I mean, same thing. We'd go to dinner with him, and it was just like, you know, crazy stuff. So, you know, legends, you know, being around legends like that. So I'm sure there's, like I said, I'm sure there's plenty more that, you know, I could, you know, sit here and think about and rack up some weird situations that I've been in that, you know, wouldn't have come about if I wasn't, you know, so lucky to be doing this work. So there's a lot of them out there, I'm sure.
Those are some great stories. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I got next question for you. Favorite member of the Sports Junkies?
favorite, I mean, I like them all, but, probably say Jason Lurch.
Lurch Papa.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're all cool. I like them all and all friends with them, so they're all good dudes.
Well, that's good to know. And final question, a little more serious perhaps. Nats 2015 win total.
A little more serious. I got a little scared there. I thought my doctor had told you something. Nats win total, what'd they get, 96 last year? I mean, shoot, you had Scherzer this year. I'm going to say and hopefully guys like Harper are able to stay healthy, guys like Zimmerman are able to stay healthy and not miss a lot of time. Why not? Let's go for 102.
Wow, that's rare air right there. All right, 102 from CJ podcast.
Hey,
all right.
Hey, look, if you won 96 and you just shoveled $210 million to a guy to come over who won a Cy Young Award 2 years ago in the American League, you would think that that's worth a few more victories. And like I said, you get your outfielder back who's developing at still only 22 years of age, who missed a significant amount of time a couple different times last year. You figure, hey, that should be a lot more than the 13 home runs he produced last year. He gets back up in maybe that 25 range, and hey, that could be your six extra wins right there that you didn't get last year.
Yeah, and frankly, I might be bummed if Harper only hits 25 this year.
So. Yeah.
All right, CJ, I could talk to you all night and pick your brain, but we got to cut it off here. I want to give you a spot to put your plugs in where they can find you on Twitter, find your work online, anything else you want to throw out there. Just give yourself some plugs, bud.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you can catch me, anybody who's listening. It's at MassinCJ on Twitter, the same on Instagram. And, if you're checking it out right now throughout spring training, I'm literally loading tons of pictures and videos up of these guys warming up down here so you can sort of hopefully get a feel for it. Sitting up there where the snow's surrounding you guys in the cold weather in D.C., at least I'll give you a little feel for it down here. So at MassinCJ on Twitter and on Instagram, and you can certainly hit up MassinSports.com, and you'll find me right there on the homepage under the Nationals column.
Well, that sounds great. CJ, you've been doing some great work so far. I'm really excited to see a fellow DC-er doing some work for Masson and being involved with the Nationals. So thanks for joining me today, and hope to see you around the park, and let's get a beer sometime soon.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it when I get back into town. Yep.
Thank you so much.
Yep, call me anytime.
And that was my interview with MassonSports.com, Chris Johnson, a.k.a. CJ, obviously. I want to thank him again for joining me. That was a fun half-hour baseball talk, so thanks, bud. We are done for this week. Bye for now.